32, the State Board of Pharmacy, and considering our current numbers, I am opening up a public hearing with a subcommittee of the Subcommittee on Education Joint Ways and Means Committee at this point. So I would like to turn it directly over to Karen McLean, the Administrative Director for the State Board of Pharmacy, to talk to us about the budget.
I would be happy to do so. Again, I'm Karen McLean from the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. I'm the Administrative Director, and part of what that means is that I'm responsible for the development of our budget for the agency. That's one of my many hats that I wear there. So also with me today is Bernie Foster. He's a public member on our board. And also with me is Paige Clark in the back of the room. She is a pharmacist consultant on behalf of the board, so we wanted to have a pharmacist available if there are pharmacy-type questions that she can answer today. Gary Schnabel, our executive director, was not able to be here today due to some previous out-of-town scheduled appointments. If it please the chair, I will provide a quick overview of the agency, the budget drivers and big issues, the performance measure results and the changes in the data, a prioritized list of the services, the reduction options, quality improvement efficiency concept, and the update from the 2005 session, and review of our essential and policy packages, and the summary of the proposed legislation. Is that acceptable?
It is, and I wanted to ask the committee members, can you hear okay?
Yes.
It seem like the microphone's okay?
Am I not talking loud enough?
I'm all right.
You all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Please proceed.
I have to take my glasses off so I can read some of my stuff. I can't see you very well, but I can read.
That's probably good for you.
The agency mission for the Oregon Board of Pharmacy is to promote, preserve, and protect the public health, safety, and welfare by establishing high standards in the practice of pharmacy and regulating the quality and distribution of drugs in Oregon. The board was established in 1891. The purpose of the board is to control and regulate the practice of pharmacy through the licensure of people, pharmacists, pharmacy interns, and pharmacy technicians, and the regulation of drug outlets involved in the manufacture and the production and sale of distribution of drugs. That includes legend drugs, which are prescription drugs, over-the-counter drugs, non-prescription, also known as, and controlled substances, the drugs with abuse and addiction potential, in addition to devices and materials that may be used in the diagnosis of illnesses and disease. The board currently has 25 different kinds of license types and approximately 18,500 licensees. In your appendix letter B, I have a whole list of all of our different license types and all of the different fees that are associated with them and the number in each one. Very simply, we have people and places. And that is unique to the Board of Pharmacy in the state of Oregon among health licensing agencies. Typically, most licensing agencies only have people. We have people and places. Three long-term strategic goals that the board has identified are to protect Oregon consumers by regulating the practice of pharmacy and the distribution of drugs, to provide excellent customer service, and to conduct business in a manner that supports a positive environment for the pharmacy industry. Ongoing efforts that the board has identified include evaluating methods for assessing and monitoring the competency of pharmacists, accelerating the frequency of on-site inspections of various drug outlets, focusing on investigations of consumer complaints and allegations of diversion and other drug distribution violations, and working closely with a variety of our stakeholders. A historical perspective, prior to the mid-80s, the board's primary focus was examinations and licensing and on-site inspection of pharmacies. More recently, the board has refocused its attention on larger issues that directly relate towards drug outlets. Automation, electronic technology, corporate mergers and blurring of state and national borders have contributed to the increasing complexity of drug manufacturing and distribution practices. High-profile issues that come to the board include things like the methamphetamine issue and pseudoephedrine and the recent legislation that was changed in 2005. The board did take action to implement the new rule as required, and all the pseudoephedrine products, 100% except for a very small handful, are accepted, and they are all prescription items Schedule 3 at this time. Some of the issues that we're challenged with getting to include issues that have to do with the regulation of compounding for prescribing practitioners, remote dispensing issues, electronic prescription transmission, and record keeping. Boards of Pharmacy, I already said that. I'm trying to go quickly because I know I don't want to give you too much information. It's all here for you. Major budget drivers and environmental factors include the agency's budget being driven primarily by workload created through the requirements of research, rulemaking, and reporting, impacted by the following kinds of things. Pharmacists are increasingly engaged in collaborative therapy drug management relationships with practitioners and patients. As a state's population increases and grows, the use of prescription and non-prescription drugs continues to increase, and people are getting more savvy about medications. As pharmacists become more involved in direct patient care and drug therapy management, the use of pharmacy technicians in the preparation of prescriptions continues to become more widespread. Technicians also have an increasing access to prescription drugs and controlled substances, thus the temptation to risk of drug diversion for personal use or illegal distribution is becoming more pervasive, and it's an issue the board is having to deal with often. More pharmacies than ever before are owned and operated by corporations. Many of these are large, publicly held companies. No longer is the small, personally owned Fairley's shop on the corner, and it's a huge Rite Aid or a Fred Meyer or something like that. And so with that comes complex business and financial structures and heavily staffed legal departments and government relation teams. In addition, boards of pharmacy are being stressed by the demand for the attention to their stakeholders' issues. Much more time is required to attend to this, with sensitivity to the increasing complex issues that affect the consumer, the pharmacist, the pharmacy, the pharmaceutical manufacturers, wholesalers, professional and industry associations, and other state and federal regulatory agencies. Changes in the focus of practice of pharmacy and technology advances being incorporated into systems of drug distribution across the country will require increased devotion of resources and attention to administrative rules, statutes, and policies that are rapidly becoming out of date. As a result of recent publications and reports of medical and medication errors nationwide, increased activity at the state level to develop mechanisms for assessing quality systems for effective reporting, such as the Patient Safety Commission, has required agency staff and board members' participation. And even as recently as today's board meeting, the board discussed the fact that we will be doing very active participation with the Patient Safety Commission. And one of the things that this commission is rolling out is they're inviting pharmacies to participate in the commission and the activities for self-reporting of errors to this commission to help avoid future errors and to also help the awareness of what kinds of things can be fixed in the future. How can we address these problems in the future? Additionally, in the governor's recommended budget binder on pages 27 to 33 is an extensive list of the kinds of stakeholders that the board works with. They do include consumers, the FDA, the DEA, all kinds of health professionals, pharmaceutical companies, associations, etc. So there's a very extensive list of people that we do work with on a state and level, state, local, and national level. Finally, one of the biggest issues for our staff has been the staff turnover associated with our compliance staff, who are all required to be pharmacists by rule. These pharmacists are required to have 5 years of active practice in the state of Oregon, and the state salary compensation is significantly lower than private practice. So we have a very hard time recruiting and keeping people in these positions, and often when people leave, that is the reason they cite for leaving is the low salary. So that is a very significant problem. We have had a vacancy for 2 years, and it's been a tremendous challenge for our staff, workload-wise, because this position has been vacant.
Can you give us an example of the disparity? I mean,
it's about
percentage-wise or
30% low. So, and the thing that's challenging in pharmacy, unlike the way the state's compensation system is set up, we have these 8 or 9 steps within the classification system. In pharmacy, a pharmacist is a pharmacist, whether they got out of school this summer and got licensed, or whether they've been licensed for many, many years and for 30 or 40 years of practice, it doesn't mean that they make more money. A staff pharmacist in a retail outlet, especially a retail outlet, and I think it's more a norm across the board, pretty much all make the same amount of money. So somebody coming out of school could make about $90,000. Just start. And none of our salary ranges, including our executive director, are more than 72, I think. So it's a big jump, and it's why they leave.
Thank you. Senator?
I just wanted to state that I think many of us have seen this a number of times, not only in your organization, mm-hmm. but in the Department of Corrections, mm-hmm. trying to recruit mm-hmm. pharmacists, in the state hospital trying to recruit pharmacists, but it's very difficult at our salary ranges.
That is true. That is true. Just a little bit of information about our agency. Want me to continue?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Our agency organization. The agency is budgeted as one single program unit. And a couple of years ago, I believe it was the governor's office asked us to, all agencies, to provide this priority list, which is also included in this packet. So part of what we did was we sat down as a management team and tried to look at the different areas of our agency. So we kind of separated them out and tried to look at all these areas. Administration, operations, compliance, and the licensing component. And a small part of our agency is a really important part. It's staffed by 1.5 FTE, and it's the Chemically Dependent Professional Recovery Program, and that is for people that have challenges in the area of drug and alcohol abuse or dependency, and they want to get help. They recognize it for themselves, and they want additional support through the profession, and they can go to that program confidentially. It's also a tool for the board to send people to that program if they are identified through an investigation of some kind. And so we'll be talking a little bit more about that program later on. The licensing section handles, is 3 FTE and handles all of the details relating to the licensing and examinations of all of our licensees. They do criminal background checks, and they handle every aspect of that from beginning to end. And it's a big job for them. Our compliance section is made up of 7 FTE. They do all the on-site inspections of pharmacies and drug outlets. They handle investigations of consumer complaints and other suspected violations, as well as the administrative details of proposed orders and disciplinary actions. The compliance staff is also responsible for the interpretation and the review of our pharmacy laws and rules, and the provision of information and consultation with all stakeholders on pharmacy and drug law requests. Operations includes the office manager, receptionist, management secretary, and two new positions, the project manager and the consultant pharmacist. These positions were approved in 2005 through the legislature and have made a world of difference in our staff. Our administration includes myself and the executive director, and we primarily oversee all of the agency operations. I mentioned the recovery program already. In Appendix A is a copy of our proposed organizational chart, so you can see how the office is laid out and the kinds of things that we have each manager handling. Some of the significant things that have happened, I won't read the list of the whole agency list of the past 10 years, but the past 2 years significantly have included the relocation of our office from the fourth floor to the first floor of the Portland State Office Building. That came as a result of a variety of things, but we were out of space, and there were a number of agencies on the fourth floor that were out of space, and so the Department of Administrative Services made the decision to move us to the first floor. So that space was a former child care center, and they had moved out. It had been vacant for quite a long time, and so the Department of Administrative Services remodeled that space, and we were moved into it in November 2005, and it's really been a great new location for us. The other big thing has been the transition of our accounting and financial and payroll services from the Department of Human Services to the Department of Administrative Services, payroll, and shared client services. That has changed a lot of how we work and a lot of the way we are able to receive information in a very timely manner and feel confident about what we're receiving. So that's been a great thing for us. Okay. Agency strategies. A couple of the strategic initiatives that will support intermediate outcomes relating to our performance measures include working towards reducing the number of dispensing errors or misfilled prescriptions. In Appendix B is a list of our compliance statistics that we put together for the legislative body to look at. And one of the things that it shows on this list, the chart looks like this, is that in the past couple of years, if you look at the on the left-hand column on the bottom, there's a number of cases opened by year, and you can see how that number of cases has gone up and up and up. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk a little bit about today, is just our general workload has increased significantly. And it's from any variety of things. It's from when inspectors go out and they inspect in a pharmacy and there is a warning notice, and the warning notice isn't handled in a sufficient amount of time, it may become a case, and it will go before the board for disciplinary action if it's not taken care of in a prompt manner. The other thing that this dispensing errors, it's under complaints by type, and it refers to dispensing errors, and you can see that in column 2006 there were 36 as compared to 2005 being 51. That's something that we're in some respects having to manually calculate every year right out of our minutes to provide that information, but it's information that's been very useful to us to be able to evaluate how we're doing.
Excuse me, I had a question for you. You mentioned before when you were talking about the patient safety program, you talked about self-reporting. What kind of incentives are there to self-report errors?
Well, the incentive, Representative Glazio, is that when they self-report it and it's handled, it's outside of the regulatory vein. So if the inspectors go out, or if it's reported to the board as an error, we would go out and investigate it, and there may be a civil penalty associated with the kind of error that occurred. It depends on what kind of error it is. There's times that you've probably all heard from time to time about a misdispensed prescription that it's just misfilled. And somebody's taken it and they get really sick, and God forbid somebody dies. And I can't think of a time that that's happened that for a case that's come through our office in the last 5 years that I've been there. But it's that kind of incentive where they go, and then that group of people can talk amongst themselves and say, how do we prevent this from happening in the future? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, okay. I have a question.
Yes,
it's handy.
Oh, well. Why not? It's handy.
Okay. We're talking about complaints, errors, or what have you, various and sundry types. One of the things that I'm encountering is not necessarily, your other categories, but I'm wondering if it's appearing in one or in other. And that is... we've gotten into a somewhat complex world now as far as the insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, Part D, on and on and on, sort of thing. And are you having, are you hearing about many problems in relationship to appropriate billing of, or inappropriate, I guess it would be if you're hearing about it, to the third-party payers?
Representative Glazio, Representative Jensen, that's kind of a complex answer for us because it's not an area that the Board of Pharmacy has authority over. The third-party biller is really a separate issue, and it's not something the Board of Pharmacy regulates. So, yes, we hear about it, and yes, we participate in conversation about it, but only to the extent that we can because it's not part of the regulation that we're responsible for.
How do we make it part of the regulation you're responsible for? I guess that's passability.
Well, I guess the question is, and if I might ask if Paige Clark has any more of an answer to that question, because she's the pharmacist who has working practice area more so than I would. I'm not a pharmacist. So can you answer that more fully?
I'll just lean over and speak loudly, if that will work for you, Representative Jensen.
Just
I am Paige Clark. I am staff pharmacist consultant for the Board of Pharmacy. And so my job, thank you, Bernie, is liaison to a variety of entities, including the legislature. Like yourselves. The answer to that question is complex, and certainly the Board of Pharmacy deals with issues that deal with perhaps non-professional conduct or unprofessional conduct. If a situation were to arise in which there were a billing issue, we would not address the billing issue per se. We would, however, if it went off into the area of unprofessional conduct, we would most definitely take that up as a disciplinary issue at the board. Does that clarify for you?
Perhaps not as much as if I were to write a bill for it.
We would be happy to visit with you at any time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Starr. Thank you. I appreciate it. A quick question as it relates to your information behind tab B.
Uh-huh.
There must be an explanation. The math doesn't seem to add up.
Uh-huh.
If I added up all of the complaints by type in 2006, I get 193, and that doesn't equate with the number of cases opened in 646. So clearly there's...
This information is not 100% complete. The number of cases is complete, but if we were to give you every single complaint by type, it would be a book much bigger than this because it associates with every single section of our OAR. And there's a lot of sections within our OAR, so we were asked to give a sampling in the past, and we didn't. These were the types that were affected in just in 2006, but they might be multiple things that have to happen with a case.
Okay.
So like I said, they are hand counted, and so somebody literally went through our minutes and tried to figure out exactly how many things. We have a new database, and we're trying to figure out how to get that kind of report that's that powerful out of this database, and I'm hoping to have that happen by the next biennium. But it's one of those things that we're continuing to work towards and try to get out of our database, but right now we've been hand-counting it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Oh, the other area that I was going to mention over here was just we are exploring better ways to respond to the public and other stakeholder interests in a timely manner, and that is reflected on in Appendix C on our annual performance measure report, which I'll talk more in just a minute. Performance measures. The agency's progress towards achieving its stated goals, the board will track the following types of measures. And in Appendix C is our complete 2006 report, which I'll turn to in a second. The following goals and measures reflect the agency's, the boards and the agency chose to go in this direction. 2006 report shows that the improvements have been made on all measures. The current internal measures continue to be monitored and the outcome continues to be positive. In fact, goal 3, the internal measure, has been completed. The board established the concept of research councils, which they decided we needed stakeholder assistance and input towards the collaborative review of our administrative rules. And that's been a very successful thing, especially in this last biennium, in relationship to the wholesaler rules, which were required by the legislature. Last session, there was a bill that was introduced, and it really was more appropriate to happen in a rule than in the law. And so a variety of those stakeholders that were interested in that bill and a lot other stakeholders all came together with the board, and we came up with a set of rules relating to wholesale distribution that we believe will be a very strong tool for the board and a protection to wholesalers and distributors that are out there alike to address the issues of contaminated drugs, counterfeit drugs, illegal importation of drugs, a whole assortment of things to make sure that there's not gray market marketers out there. And you see in the news periodically these are being busted all over the country, and it's a really big deal for us right now. And one case after another, it might be a little case in a little warehouse here in Oregon that turns into a case that has national ramifications in Florida, and you know, $4 million worth of fines that have been assessed to somewhere, and 30 or 40 entities that have been licensed in a variety of different kinds of states. So these cases are not just simple little cases. It becomes this big mushrooming cloud of, oh my gosh, what have we opened the door on when we start to look at somebody's set of invoices that they have. Oh, well, where are they? Are they licensed by us? And are they licensed by us? And it kind of just becomes this tree of information. So that's a really big deal. Associated with our performance measures, I was trying to think about the interest of the legislature to the outcomes of our performance measures. And when these were developed a few years ago, in my mind, they weren't focused specifically on budget drivers. But I was thinking about, over the last month or two, how did these measures relate specifically to our budget? And I would say that the most impact is that relating to personal services, the cost of employees, travel expenses, and office expenses, in addition to the Attorney General line items. The three goals I've mentioned previously, the key performance measures include, and actually, if you don't mind and you have your materials, I'll go ahead and just turn there to Appendix D, and I'll just go through them from there. The 2006 report has been revamped as requested by the legislature.
Oh, Ms. McClain,
it's C, I'm sorry.
Okay.
C?
So we have five measures at this time. And the scope of the report, if the board identified, is identified as one program as previously mentioned. The current key performance measures specifically address issues relating to compliance and licensing, as well as general overall agency performance and customer service. The agency has the five operational programs that we've talked about. And some of the successes that we've had in performance in general over the last 2 years include addressing the issue of pseudoephedrine and making a controlled substance out of that entity in July of 2006. That became a rule by the Board of Pharmacy after the legislation was passed. And I think one of the exciting things about that is over the last several years, we've been working very closely with the Oregon Methamphetamine Task Force and a variety of other entities, and they've provided a report to us monthly on the number of meth labs that have been closed in a given month. And so that number has gone down from in 2004 when we did our first action on this topic to December and January where they reported zero being closed in a month. So they went from 141. And each month the number has gone down less and less. That doesn't change the fact that there's still methamphetamine coming in from across the borders from Mexico or Canada or wherever it's coming from. But at least the measures that this legislature and the governor have taken have been successful in Oregon. And the state police are reporting that there's not as many meth lab busts that are occurring as a result of the action that's been taken because it's not as available. So that's a really exciting statistic to be a part of.
Excuse me, Representative Jensen.
One of the things, and it strikes me with this, that there's always a kind of apology that meth hasn't gone away. I appreciate what you're saying is true and correct from the best of information that I hear. But one of the big and most significant things about it, at least we don't have babies that are addicted to meth because of the cooking that goes on in their homes now, where a couple of years ago we did. So we've made a, you know, in that regard, a monumental step, I believe, forward. Just editorializing. I'm sorry.
Yes, no, thank you, Representative Jensen. That's true. That's absolutely true.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. I'm trying to remember back to those methamphetamine bills because I had some real issues with them. And one of the issues I had that I recall was that the Board of Pharmacy was not regulating these wholesalers who would operate out of their garage. Mm-hmm. What have you done about that?
Representative Iglesias, Senator Walker, that's a really good question, and it goes right back around the circle to what I was talking about the new wholesaler rules, and I have a little bit more information on that. I can jump to that now if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay. Let me find where it is in my book. Sorry. The wholesalers. One of the things that happened as a result of this new rule that we implemented in December of 2006. Like I said, a lot of stakeholders were involved in this. It has to do with the fact that, you know, there are these gray market wholesalers that are out there, and that's part of the distribution chain that you're referring to. The new rules that we implemented became necessary to ensure the integrity of the drug supply in Oregon and require increased licensing requirements, on-site inspections, and investigations. That's the nutshell of it all. It's about 40 pages of rules that have been implemented and revised, and the licensure requirements for these facilities, they will be required to have a certain level of national certification, or a certification that is going to happen as a result of an investigation, not an investigation, but an inspection process that will take place here in Oregon. The National Association of Boards of Pharmacy has what they call is a VOD program, and so distributors and outlets can become certified through them. It's more expensive to do it that way, so we didn't want to make our rules so restrictive that the small wholesaler in the state of Oregon would be put out of business. And yet at the same time, there probably are some small wholesalers in the state of Oregon that shouldn't be in business in the state of Oregon, like you, the example you've provided in, out of their garage. That's not an appropriate kind of place in my mind, and probably in the board's mind. So that's one of the things that these new rules are being implemented. There's actually a staged rollout of them, and all of the pharmacy wholesalers will be going through that process as they renew in 2007, this year, in September. They will have to meet new criteria in order to even renew and do business in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. That was pretty important in the last session. More important than making people have to go to the doctor to get a prescription for antihistamine.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, by way of information, just curious, I don't think you have it immediately available here, but do you have any statistics on, I'm not actually looking for quantity dispensed, but the way that things have changed in sort of the pharmaceutical world, I would assume that you probably inspect pharmacies that are actually by mail only.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't inspect them.
You don't inspect them?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Most of them are not in-state. If they're in-state, they're inspected, I believe.
Okay. But I was thinking of all the different ways now that... I mean, you have pharmacies that are by mail.
Mm-hmm.
You have pharmacies that obviously have always been in hospitals, mm-hmm. in terms of dispensing there. You have clinics that have dispensing authority. Mm-hmm. You obviously, what's been mentioned here is that many of the pharmacies that we now have are part of corporate chains. I'm just trying to get at just how small is the number that are actually sort of what we always used to remember as a neighborhood pharmacy. Just how small is that number?
Well, Representative Guizzo and Senator Devlin, that's a really good question, and it's one that we're asked a lot, actually.
Yeah.
So on our statistics, it shows that there's a certain number of retail pharmacies, and I think it says it's right around 1,000, if I read from memory. About 200 of those are actually in Oregon and are small mom-and-pop retail shops.
Okay. And that number keeps dropping every year, doesn't it?
That number does go down, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? Follow up on
Representative Jensen, sure.
Senator Devlin, how many of those are in very small communities?
Pardon me?
How many of those mom and pops are in the small communities?
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question right offhand. I could get that for you, though.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, not always in small communities, and I personally regretted the loss of neighborhood pharmacies, but sometimes they come with, sorry to labor this, with other amenities. I've lost two of the best lunch counters that probably existed in the metropolitan area because the pharmacies went away.
We're not charging you with...
Yeah, you don't do the...
We understand it's not in your purview, so...
Okay.
I can appreciate there's one real close to my house, so... let's see, I was working on performance measures. So I'll go back to that.
Yeah.
One of the other things that happened during 2005-2007 that the board initiated, the board for a long time has looked at pharmacy technicians and the rules and regulations around them and the licensure of them. Prior to 2005, pharmacy technicians were what we call registered. That means that the board did not have disciplinary authority over their license, but simply could deny a renewal if there was a major problem with them. The legislature passed a bill, I believe it was Senate Bill 512, and in 2005, which allowed an immediate transition of all pharmacy technician licenses to a license status and gave the board authority, disciplinary authority over those licenses. And during the interim, the board has been looking at educational and ongoing training requirements associated with these people that are in pharmacies and felt like it was really important that all of these pharmacy technicians have a common level of a starting place so that if they went from one place to another, they at least had a confidence that they had this level of experience that was common. So the board in June of 2006 passed rules to require all pharmacy technicians to become certified on a national level by 2008. It gave them over 2 years to get this accomplished. And it's an exam that should be able to be passed by anybody that's been in this profession for any amount of time. And so the board really felt strongly about that, and it's been a very positive move on the board's part. The other thing that the board has done, as a result of one of our performance measures, is the board annually does a review, an audit of all pharmacist renewals to ensure that they're doing their continuing education 15 hours annually. 10% of those are reviewed annually. It's about 400 out of the 4,300 pharmacists I looked at annually. And we look at them to make sure that they really did their 15 hours and that they did them in the prescribed areas that the board rules defines. And if they're correct, great. If they're not correct, there's a problem. And one of the things our measure this year shows is that I believe we're at about in 2006, the pharmacist renewals indicate that. Where is that one? Inspected pharmacies. Oh, continuing education on time, 98%. So 98% of the people that were actually audited had their pharmacy continuing education compliance on time at the appropriate levels of requirement. So that's been something that we've been tracking and watching for a while.
So just so I understand this, so you only audit 10%.
Everybody's required to turn it in, and on their renewal form, it indicates, did you complete this, and you have to sign that they did do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we audit 10%. We only have one person that handles all of these renewals, and it takes them actually several months to go back and look after the fact to see if they really did it right. And that's the figure that the board has elected to choose. It could change, but that's one of the things that the board does look at.
You know, what Representative Edwards would think about that one?
Actually, it's a standard sub-sampling process. 10% is actually a decent audit rate.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Friend of the board.
Pardon me?
He's a friend of the pharmacy board.
Let's see. One of the big things that we've done in the last 2 years is we've made a staffing choice on behalf of the agency. I talked earlier about the vacancies that we have had for our pharmacy inspectors. And so we had a candidate that applied who was not from the Portland area. And we thought, gosh, to have a candidate is awesome, and let's see how we can maybe work this out. He was interested in actually being our on-the-road guy, and he wanted to travel all over the state. And so that's really how he has spent the last 2 years, is pretty much on the road, full-time, doing pharmacy inspections, which is why our performance measure that relates to the number of pharmacies inspected annually number has gone up dramatically over the last 2 years, because we've had somebody out on the road full-time. And that's been a really exciting choice that we were able to make, and the fact that it was successful. It's also an indicator of why the number of cases has gone up, and the number of warning notices, or deficiency notices, as the board now calls them, have been issued, because we're out there, and it's a better reflection of what's really happening.
Ms. McQueen?
Yes.
Just to help me,
mm-hmm.
Can you just let me know sort of where you are sometime? In other words...
I'm sorry?
Page 8.
I am on page 3 of 13 right now.
I'm
kind of flipping back and forth. I'm looking at our successes at the beginning that relate to measures later on.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I was going to go through them individually very quickly.
Oh, you are? Okay. Okay. Well, that's why I asked.
Thank you. Customer service. The board's compliance staff continues to do an admirable job of streamlining documentation and completing investigations for the presentation to the board in a timely manner. And what I would say about that is that, you know, we have these cases that come before the board and we have all the supporting documentation for our board members. And we're actually, one of the changes for efficiency that we've done in the last 2 years is to stick several binders worth of information. And I think today's packet was probably this big. And it was good 4 or 5 inches from the December board meeting to the February board meeting of the number of cases that needed to be looked at by our board and all the supporting documentation that goes with them. We actually are bringing those onto CDs now. That was actually at the request of one of our board members, so they didn't have to look through all this paper. So they're actually able to bring their laptops to board meetings and look at the documents at the time and review them, and it's been a very efficient thing in addition to saving the money that it costs to ship them all over the state. So that's been a great thing that we've been able to do. Our customer service measure clearly identifies in all categories that the board is doing excellent or above average, which was a really exciting thing to see. I will acknowledge that our sample was not huge, but the sample that we did get was really successful. In addition, the board's website has really become a tool, and we are regularly putting things on there on a weekly basis, updating information. We are able to use that to put full text of rule revisions on our website rather than send them out in paper to all of our licensees, which was again a huge cost measure for us. I mentioned that we already were able to take care of that internal measure that we were taking care of. I talked a little bit about the challenges of the I'm looking at the challenges now on page 4 and the issues relating to vacancies. It's a pervasive issue that relates to every single one of our performance measures essentially. Bottom line, we really need to be able to deal with this issue in our agency, and it's a challenge for us all the time. In addition to the fact that the agency is called on regularly to assist with projects that require a pharmacist's expertise, such as Medicare Part D that was mentioned earlier, it's a really good example of something that the agency itself was not responsible for, but it's not under the board's authority to handle. But during the early rollout of Medicare Part D, the Office of Assistance Programs needed assistance in communicating quickly to pharmacies and pharmacists, and we were able to assist with that by getting a letter out to our licensees in a very efficient manner on their behalf. Finally, I would say that with the addition of our project manager position, we were able to do a lot of the different kinds of rule writing that we did in this past biennium because he was able to handle the projects from beginning to end, and you know, a whole bunch of staff in our office weren't distracted by doing a lot of other tasks. He was really able to keep them on task and say, yep, we need to meet here, this is what we need, this is when we need it. And that's really been a great thing to be able to have that position. It's night and day different. So we're very grateful to have that position. So quickly I will go through our key performance measures. And let me find my notes here. I had something specifically I wanted to share about that. When you look at our performance measure on page 5, the percent of pharmacies that are inspected annually that are in compliance. I talked about this a little bit earlier, but you'll see that the number is 71%. And one of the reasons why that number looks that way is, as I mentioned, the fact that there's more warning notices that are being issued. This measure, the data specifically relates to the total number of pharmacies that are inspected and the total of number of pharmacies that got a warning notice. That's how this specific data is created. Warning notices can be issued for a variety of reasons. There's technical issues, and there are serious issues. The technical issues can be things like the pharmacy doesn't have up-to-date laws and rules. The pharmacy doesn't have current inventory records. They might have incomplete documentation of policies and procedures. These are things that I'll refer you back to. One of the tabs has a self-inspection form on it, and it's something that the board created several years ago in order to help pharmacies in self-compliance. So they are required to go through this self-inspection report. It's updated annually by our compliance staff, and it is available on our website. They are sent a reminder card to pull it off the web, print it, and do it before February 1st each year, so that when our pharmacists start getting out and doing inspections, they have a tool to go by to say, did you do it, what did you do, and how did you correct it? And it can be everything from, this was a problem on February 1st, but on February 10th we fixed the problem, and this is how we remedied it. So if we have somebody that did their pharmacy inspection, or they didn't do their self-inspection report, that might be a reason why they would also be disciplined or get a warning notice because they didn't do it on time. Serious issues, what I might say also about those kinds of technical issues, is that they are required to fix the problem and remedy it and tell the board what they did within 30 days. They have to send a written report into the board about what occurred. The other part is that there are serious issues, and they could be everything from an unlicensed pharmacy technician, pharmacy technicians advising patients, a pharmacist that doesn't cancel a patient on a new prescription, unauthorized access to a pharmacy, security issues in general. There's someone in a pharmacy called a pharmacist in charge, and sometimes it happens that there is no pharmacist in charge for a designated store, and that's a very serious issue from the board's perspective. Somebody's got to be in charge. Those are serious issues. They are required to be, some require further follow-up and investigation. The pharmacies must correct those issues immediately within 15 days report to the board on what they did to fix the problem. So when you come back and you look at these statistics and you look at the targets, one of the things we didn't do this year was change any of our targets because we felt like we needed to see where people were going and have a little bit longer period of time. And I've only been with the board since late 2001. And so I've been primarily responsible for coming up with this data each year, and I thought I want to make sure that the information that we're continuing to look at is consistent to compare apples and apples and oranges instead of trying to mix the fruit basket. So at this point, we do have a 75% target, and 75% is actually exemplary. And one of the things that our compliance staff told me this week was that the pharmacies in general are doing great, and in fact, they are getting less and less warning notices. It's the other kinds of outlets that we're looking at now. We've been going to correctional facilities. They've been going to county health clinics. They've been going to a variety of other locations. And so that's part of what is a mandate of the boards to do, but it's not something the board has actively done annual inspections or even regular inspections of because of the workload and because of the staffing issues. So pharmacies retail and institutional, which would be hospitals, are first and foremost priority, but we actually got up to almost 100 of those different kinds of outlets over the last year, and we're seeing more and more of those kinds of problems, which identify more warning notices. Are there any questions that I can answer about this first performance measure before I move on?
I think you'll find this committee is
okay.
Will definitely we're not shy.
Okay.
So great. So I appreciate that.
Okay. On page 7, key performance measure number 2, the audited pharmacists who complete continuing education on time. I think I answered that question. The board's expectation is 100%, and unless you need more information on that, I think that answers that question. You'll see the yellow page number 10. I couldn't get the table to work right for me, so I had to make a correction. The table is actually reflected in days now on the yellow form, and this is the number of days to process and complete an investigation from complaint to board office. And what I would share with you about this is that we meet every other month primarily, our board does. And so then the amount of time between the time a complaint comes in to the time the investigation is complete, from the time that is finished and it gets to our board, may be at least a minimum of 60 days. It's probably not going to be much less than 60 days. And it takes time to get that information prepared to our board to put it on that disk and they can read it. So it went 2 weeks ago to our board so that they could get it and look at it for this week's reporting and review. So there's a lag time that takes place in order for the board to have an investigation occur from the inspection or a complaint that comes in. And one of the things that we were looking at, specifically our executive director and I were talking about, just the inconsistency in the data really kind of has to do with, it could be the date of the complaint and the date on the physical complaint, or it could be the date the investigation was started, or it could be the date of noncompliance or the anonymous report was suspected. So we do have some work to do, I think, on this measure to look at maybe more carefully kind of where our data is coming from and how we might reflect that better in our database. We do report all complaints into our database, and so it's one of the tools that we have now, and again, we're trying to get reports out of there that are meaningful to us. So this target of 190 days, statutorily we're required to wrap them up within 120, and in most cases we're able to do that. So you see that for the last couple of years we've been kind of hovering between 69 and 75%, and that's why we went ahead and set the target at 90, because I wasn't feeling like we were making that very well, and the fact that our board meetings are a little bit more spread out than they were in the past also has an impact on that. Our customer service measure, number 5, is on page 11. And like I said, we didn't have a huge sampling to work with, but what we did do 3 separate surveys. One was on our website, and we got very little response on that one. We did have a survey that went out to all new licensees that were licensed during the calendar year 2006, January through August, and that went to 1,841 new licensees. And of those, 256 people responded. That's a 13.91% response rate. And then finally, there was a pharmacist conference in September that we were able to get that to. We gave out 200 and only 25 responded. I was kind of surprised only 12% responded. But we were able to take a look at that. One of the things we looked at, we were really excited about these results. And the board really strives to be responsive and timely and accurate. And we were looking at helpfulness and expertise, and those numbers did come out lower, and we were reflecting on that. And part of it is the fact that we have had a fair amount of turnover in our agency. I've been there 5 years, and there's only 4 employees that have been there longer than me. No, maybe I'm one of the 4 or 5 people. I'm one of that group of people. So it's we've had a fair amount of change in our agency, and when you only have 17 and a half staff, that's a pretty significant thing. So you've got new staff training new staff, and so we may not be able to have it down as much as we need to on the expertise level, and so that's an indicator for us, and it's something that we're working on. That brings me to the end of the performance measures. I'm going to go back to my report back here. Sorry. Let me find the place I need to be. The prioritize list and reduction options are on page 10 of the booklet.
Ms. McGuinn?
Yes.
Question from Senator Devil?
Oh, sorry.
I did have a question, actually, and it might be for LFO as well. On customer service, has DAS given direction to agencies in terms of how that would be structured in terms of those surveys? Because it's nothing just to your agency, but I see that you've included a category that I haven't seen on actually any of the other agencies that I've seen.
You've included it?
No, you have don't know. An option for people to actually opt out of the question. And actually, most of these that I've seen for other agencies only have a rating and not a not a refuse to answer or don't know reply. And I just was wondering if DAS had given any specific direction in these.
DAS does have DAS guidelines on this. I would have to go back. I think that one of the things, because this was new this time, one of the things we did, we took a sample survey that DAS provided to agencies, and we had a couple of extra questions that we added on to the end that might reflect the don't know, that don't have anything really to do with the 5 issues that DAS asked us to look at. So some of them were, did they come through the door or did they come through the phone or the email? Yeah. How did they get in contact with us, or where did they get information from, or did they use our website? There was some of those kinds of things. And people, I was surprised how many people said they didn't know. It was kind of strange.
Not that I wanted to put too much weight on this, but I remember one that we just reviewed earlier this morning in another committee that had 95%
standards for targets, mm-hmm. and they were getting 93. Well, looking at it that way is one way to look at it, but if half the people that responded didn't respond, it's actually, it's kind of a different indication. So I just am wondering just what sort of directions we're given on this. And I just want to put that forward because I know that we'll see other budgets with these. I can tell you in another committee, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to belabor this, but we have problems with that measure because when you try to apply it to the Department of Corrections and the Department of or the Indigent Defense Commission, having satisfied customers is not particularly
exactly. And I would just say, I just pulled out my quick sheet here that was prepared by our staff person. How does the service you received at the Oregon Board of Pharmacy compare to that of the provided by other by another agency? And 126 people actually said they didn't know. And so maybe they don't have an experience with another agency to compare it to. Yeah. And that was one of the questions. And that got a high number.
Representative Edwards. Mr. Chair, just as a point of interest, I am the founder and CEO of a market research-based consulting firm, so I have some expertise in this area. Typically, we would exclude the don't know responses mm-hmm. from the base in calculating percentages. Yeah. I'm also curious to know, not to belabor this point, but it appears that you're using a four-point scale that's unbalanced with two above-average points and only one below-average point.
One of the things that we learned after we did this, Representative Edwards, sorry, was that we were looking at the scale and we realized we did part of it wrong. Okay. And so we had excellent, above average, average, and poor, and don't know. And so we will obviously fix that the next time around, but that was how we came up this time. And so, but the majority of the answers were in the above average and excellent category. So it was very interesting.
Understood.
It was the first time through and we learned a lot through it.
Another point of information for us, perhaps for LFO to pass on to DAS, if they're the one, if that's the agency that's providing the information, is that we tend to prefer either 5-point or 7-point scales. 7-point scales are actually preferable to 5-point scales because it provides a neutral midpoint and enough variation for folks to register a more graduated response.
Makes sense.
I'd also appreciate it in future if in reporting data that they report sample sizes. I think this is one of the only board or commission we've seen so far that has done so.
That was
one more taken. Of course, DAS can't afford Representative Edwards' professional services, so we appreciate the discounted version we just got here. So, Representative Jensen?
I'm just going to comment to Representative Edwards on things. I think they must have as many opportunities to be unhappy as they have to be happy.
Yes.
And a four-point scale or an even number scale skews that on one end of that thing.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll move on to our prioritized list and our reduction options that are also both part of appendixes. In our prioritized list, it is Appendix E. And like I said earlier, we've split the office into administration, operations, licensing, exams, compliance, and the recovery program. In addition, I've added onto this form, because it's a policy package, the prescription drug monitoring program. And we've gone through and identified which portion of the budget is associated with that. Is there a question?
No.
Oh. So that if there's any questions, let me know about that.
We all perk up when you say policy package because
policy packages.
We're waiting for that.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Okay. So our policy packages. We have two policy packages, and our essential packages are basically there's nothing changed except the fact that we did do a technical adjustment to shift funds from professional services to IT professional services.
And Ms. McLean, is this anywhere in the?
It is on page 12.
Page 12.
That's
okay.
Where the start of it is.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
So that's where that starts. And then policy packages, we have three, essentially. Two of them are basically the same thing. And well, I will explain it in this way. The board has been working with the Department of Administrative Services for the past 2 years to transition the Board of Pharmacy out of an agency called 83300, Health-Related Licensing Boards, to a Board of Pharmacy account called 83300 as its own agency number. There's a little group of 9 or 10 boards that was the health-related licensing boards. And the Board of Pharmacies very specifically has requested to be moved out of that grouping of agencies because we are significantly larger. We have more FTE. We have more licensees. There's not a lot of comparables between us and a less than 1 point FTE. And so it's been challenging because all of our budgeting, all of our financial records have been tied together with these other 9 boards. Even though they're separate accounts and everything, it's just been very cumbersome for us to kind of wrap our hands around and go, okay, we're kind of moved out of the house, essentially, is the best way I can put it. So we've been working together to get this done, and this is basically the last piece of the puzzle to get it to happen. Policy Package 232 takes all of the agency's resources in other funds and federal funds out of Agency 833, including all of the staffing positions that exist in 833, which are 17.5 positions. Policy Package 100 puts them into Agency 855 and moves all of the staffing and all of the resources to 855. What I would add about Policy Package 100 is the additions that we're asking for in this biennium, and they are pretty minimal. We are asking for 2 part-time positions. The first one is to support our compliance department. As you've heard me say, the caseload has gone up. There's a variety of things that have impacted our budget. We've asked for 1 half-time clerical position to help with the increased workload that has occurred in our compliance area. And the other area I alluded to earlier was our recovery program. That position was approved to be a paid position by the legislature back in 2001. It's a half-time FTE, and he really is had an increased workload for that program, and we don't even know the full impact of how it is for him because it is a confidential off-site program, but he has very clearly communicated to our board and his council that helps direct that program that he really needs some additional help. We've used all the volunteer resources that we can use, and often there are people that are actually part of the program that part of their board required time is to help invest back in the program. And so at this point, they are asking for 1 half-time FTE to help with the clerical duties associated with that program. The final part of that policy package includes the restructuring and reclassification of my position. And it's funny to sit here in this chair and talk about my reclassification, but it was identified in 2003 to actually be eliminated as a classification, the one that I'm in right now. It was decided by the Department of Human Services not to eliminate that classification, but on looking at my position description, it's not what was intended back when it was originally authorized. And because of all of the changes in the agencies, from the fact that this was a non-supervisory position, and I'm supervising more than half of our agency staff, all of licensing, all of compliance, and all of the different hats that I wear for our agency. As a small agency, of course, it gets kind of into one little hole, and a lot of them come my way. So it's the request is to reclassify my position to a PEMD series, which is equivalent to the other director in our office that has the similar amount of staffing underneath him. Overall, this whole package is $125,959, and I believe our LFO analyst is going to make a recommendation to an adjustment because of the way it comes out of PICS and the way it looks at the full-time benefits. There's an adjustment to be made because they're part-time positions, so it'll be a reduction. The second package that we have is specific to a program that is related to Senate Bill 34, and that's coming before this legislature this session. Several years ago, the Board of Pharmacy received a grant in the amount of $350,000. This grant was awarded in the anticipation that legislation would be passed for a prescription drug monitoring program or something like that in the state of Oregon. The board has taken a leading role in this, and the idea is to develop a program to address requests from pharmacists and practitioners to do something about the increasing attempts by individuals referred to as doctor shoppers and drug seekers. I'm reading this on page 13. That inappropriately obtain prescription narcotics and controlled substances. This database would collect information that is already in existence. It would go directly from the pharmacy that dispensed information on controlled substances 2, 3, and 4 only. It's about 9% of the prescription data in the state, to a database that would be a confidential database in the Board of Pharmacy, restricted only to the staff that would work with that program. And they would be able to respond to requests that come in from very selected groups of people and only those that are authorized to have access to the data. And there's a lot more information about that that will come out as a result of Senate Bill 34. But this package requests authorization to spend the $340,000 of grant funds to implement the program. It has in it two full-time FTE, and it also is expected to adequately fund the program through the 07-09 biennium. There are additional grants that the board would expect to apply for that are available that could be up to $750,000 altogether from this grant and the other grant to adequately fund the program for a period of time. So that is the rationale behind our policy packages. And seeing no questions, I'll go on to our ending balance. Our ending balance, at this point, I have identified in here that our ending balance is identified as $988,000 and approximately 5.74 months of dollars. Our cash balance in the bank is typically not less than $1 million, which would be closer to 1 year. Well, obviously that's close to $1 million, but it's we're right around a 1 year mark of having what we need to have available if some catastrophic something would happen and we had no license renewals over the course of a year. The proposed legislation in this biennium includes Senate Bill 200. This bill increases the maximum amount of civil penalties that may be assessed by the State Board of Pharmacy, authorizes the board to assess costs of disciplinary process against licensees or certificate holders that have been disciplined, and establishes continuing jurisdiction over the board and licensee certificate holders. This legislation came as a result of evaluating really this wholesaler issue, and it is primarily targeted towards being able to levy a fine. When you talk about these corporate legal departments, a $1,000 fine isn't going to get their attention. They'll write the check. And so that's part of what the board is looking for, is some increased authority to be able to address these kinds of issues, specific mostly to outlets. So that's really the biggest issue there. And most other boards, health-related licensing boards, have similar information in their statutes. This has had, it has passed out of the Health and Human Services. It's also had its second reading with the Senate, on the Senate floor, I believe. So there is a potential for future revenue, but it's not required. So it's hard to figure out how much it would actually be, because it would totally depend on the kinds of caseloads that we have and how the board would choose to assess those fines. And we also go through a process of negotiation, and often what is a civil penalty noticed is not a civil penalty that is finally signed on the dotted line. I mentioned Senate Bill 34 already. It already has had one hearing. There is another. It's had one public hearing and another scheduled, I believe, at another time. More information and more complete detail is found in our governor's recommended budget binder. And finally, we've been asked in the past to report on diversity information. And I did a very pretty color chart in the back of your budget binder on page 138, 139. But I didn't feel like I needed to expend the resources to put it into this material today. So we have a very diverse group of people in pharmacy world. And it's an interesting chart to take a look at. And upon that, that's all I have.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Are there any?
That was a lot.
Are there any questions, Representative Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Early in your presentation, you established that below market wages are driving turnover in your agency. How do your policy package recommendations address that problem?
Our policy packages do not represent that, Representative Edwards. We have been working very closely with the Department of Administrative Services Human Resources Section. We actually are working with Labor Relations. This time we have a concept to request that they review that. The board's challenge is that our statute on one hand says that the board sets the salary for our executive director, and yet at the same time in the same paragraph it says we have to follow DAS guidelines. So we're bound by what DAS guidelines are. And so Labor Relations negotiates that on behalf of our represented employees, which are the inspectors. Mm-hmm. And the management staff obviously is handled outside of that. and we're working with the compensation analyst, and that's actually as soon as I'm done thinking about budget, I'm going back again to provide them some more information that they've asked for on, you know, the number of people that have quit, why they've quit, how much money they went and were able to make elsewhere. I've been working on this since the day I started in 2001. It's been an issue on my table, and each year it seems to get an increased amount of attention and then kind of go beyond the back burner, and I'm not sure what else to do about it but continue to give the information, and it does appear that this time it's actually getting some attention. That's the best that I can do on that.
Good follow-up, Mr. Chair. Does this issue require a statutory change?
It could. It's a challenge. These positions, it's been questioned from time to time, how come we need pharmacy inspectors to be pharmacists?
Mm-hmm.
And pharmacist inspectors are the most expensive salary that we have in our agency. This position inspections really can't be done by a non-pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the ins and outs. They don't know the calculations of a drug, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very technical field, and it can't be done without a pharmacist. So I like, I believe it was Senator Devlin mentioned about corrections. I know that there was a change that was made earlier this year, which is driving part of what I'm working on now. We're in different unions.
Mm-hmm.
And the corrections union was able to get the Department of Administrative Services to agree to some adjustment in the salaries for their pharmacists, and that's part of why ours is being looked at more seriously at this time. So that's a help.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions? Representative Jensen.
I think along the same line, and I recognize that the contracts may be negotiated by different unions or different groups, so corrections is one area that would have pharmacists, obviously. The other area that would have pharmacists would be like the mental health
mm-hmm.
division.
State hospital.
State hospital and or hospitals, you know, as the case may be. And I don't know who does, you know, what union they're associated with. But it does seem to me that there ought to be some uniformity there, since you're looking at the same basic level of expertise, at least by definition, you're looking at that.
Yes, thank you.
Level of expertise.
Perhaps that's something in our general government subcommittee
I'd
take up.
I would comment to my colleague over here, Representative Edwards, that this is a Pandora's box that the executive department doesn't want to open at this particular time, from at least what I'm told.
Well, Representative Jensen, we're not being the executive branch.
We can open.
Yes, I say we. Sometimes the box is very interesting. Senator Devlin.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think, though, in part of it in pharmacists, part of the reasons why the starting salaries are not that much different from with 10 years of experience mm-hmm. is because of the shortage of pharmacists,
mm-hmm.
the shortages of qualified pharmacists. I don't mean that the salaries would be necessarily significantly lower.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that there are very few occupations right now. I can only think of a few where that you can go through. I believe a pharmacist is undergraduate plus about, I'm going to get this wrong, I think it's several years of graduate study.
It's seven, isn't it? It's seven altogether.
Seven altogether, mm-hmm. and start at 85 or 90,000 a year.
Plus a bonus.
Plus, yeah, mm-hmm. plus bonus.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. But I think the problem that you have in some of our areas is, I won't speak about the mental health facilities, but if you've got a choice to work in a nice, new air-conditioned pharmacy, or you get a choice to work across and your client's named Jake and he's sitting 5 feet across from you and, you know, at Oregon State Penitentiary, it's a little bit different environment to get a pharmacist or a nurse or anyone to want to work in that environment.
Public service. Representative Jensen.
I would question the premises that the good senator is making. I think corrections has a pretty easy job as far as hiring folks are concerned. Seem to be a lot of people anxious to work for them. perhaps not either yours or my cup of tea, but...
Well, Ms. McLean, well, are there any other questions? I wanted to thank you very much. And also, but before we do, I just wanted to ask Mr. Foster, if you know, you've been sitting there sort of patiently, and I wondered, and I appreciate the fact that you're here and what you do on the board, if you had any comments that you wanted to make.
Thank you. My name is Bernie Foster. I've been on the board for pretty close to 7 years as one of the public at large members. I would like to go back to Representative Edwards. One of the things I found there, and obviously I'll say this, that board could not operate without good talent like Karen and some of the others. But we have lost some good talent in the last about 7 years that I've been there. My understanding of May 1 may be coming back, but the point is that they're leaving for a number of reasons. And one of the things we found, again, Karen said it quite clearly, was the fact that better pay is very hard to get pharmacists in some in the rural areas that one talked about. So how do you keep this good talent? How do you keep this good talent and at the same time provide the services that are needed for the citizens of Oregon? It becomes a real juggling act. And one of the reasons I just really feel that you have to pay people, especially a good talent, if you're going to leave. There may be requests and other kinds of things. We have met as a board. I just want to say we have met with the board, my last president, myself, and several others have met on the other side trying to change those rules. That was 7 years. And so we just can't. So it's very difficult. So I think you guys have a tremendous responsibility. I have to agree with you. I don't think I want to sit in that and go behind those scenes where some other folks as well. But I think a lot of people that do this committee too. And there are some really committed pharmacists here. And I'm not a pharmacist, but I have met some really committed pharmacists. And they really do their job. So I envy you guys sometimes. You have to make those decisions. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Foster, on behalf of the committee for your service on the board. And with no further questions or comments? Okay. Well, I think we're going to see you back tomorrow, correct, with the work session. So, right? All right. Well,
Mr. Chair, yes? Can we discuss our meeting in Portland on the record before
that? Thank you very much. We did not. So
let me. I'm looking at your email.
Yes,
you need to do it by
you're right. Day. You're right. So let me close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5532. And just really quickly,
can I suggest something on that? I would suggest the earliest time, actually.
Yes.
The reason being
traffic.
Because of traffic, one. Parking, two. And because I do think it would be beneficial for as many of the committee members as possible to get a chance to walk through Lincoln Hall.
Right, and so I was talking, and the question... Right, and obviously, and Portland State, they really are eager to get us to... So the question becomes, if we do it at 4... I don't know that people can make it there, let's say, at 3:30 to do a tour.
Yeah.
Whereas if we start at 4:30, the hearing at 4:30,
yeah.
I mean, I know I'll get there at 4 and maybe even earlier, and we could do a tour from 4 to...
Yeah, can we plan it that way? Because I have committee till 3.
Right, that's...
Or it's 2:45,
a
45-minute drive to Portland.
Right.
So I would recommend that the tour's at 4 for those of us who can make it, and then 4:30 the committee starts.
And that's what I was thinking.
That'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, I might also suggest that not to ask for any kind of special treatment, but I believe the university can arrange for parking for us so that people don't spend 20 minutes circling to find a parking space or a garage. I don't think that they would have any problem with doing that.
No, and I'm absolutely, it's going to be important. I know there's also, Steve Bender said there's going to be a van if anyone needs transportation, and we might also think about
carpool.
But yes, I will absolutely make sure and remind Steve of that. That's really important there.
A dinner in the big city.
Right.
So we're meeting until, if we meet at 4:30, we're going to go till 7:30?
Till 7.
7, okay.
2.5 hours.
So I can make dinner reservations.
Yes. And so again, the idea is, you know, that, well, I think I put the agenda on the email still. Sort of James Slager's going to introduce, and then we're going to have some time.
Okay.
There's going to be invited testimony, and then, so. Okay, great. So we'll send out an email again, just reaffirming that the meeting will start at 4:30 for the hearing. And then 4 o'clock, they're going to have a tour, and I think it would, I'm going to be there. I know they're very eager to get those of us on.
They want to get
there.
You on the roof, is what
they want. Is that where they want to show up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Put you at risk.
Thank you, Senator Walker, for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
All right, we are adjourned.